Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Just been to Perth in England, and then came back on Monday. But today is Saturday. But yeah, it feels like never really left. It's nice just to be back. It always is, and yeah, to be practicing here, the community that we have. I guess we can. I think I've said it to a few people already. We just kind of bring it up as a subject of reflections about the trip. Yeah, so I was in Perth for about a week and a half, leading a 5-day retreat. And I spent a few days at Bodhinyana, catching up with Ajahn Brahm and old friends. And then spent another just a week in England. Meeting with the other senior monks of the Western branch monastery of Achin Chah. It's 85 monks together and another 25 novices and anagarikas and another 20 monks, 20 nuns. Yeah, so quite a large gathering of Sangha, 120 people. But things went very well, very well organized in England. And the thing that came up, impression that came up during the trip was, the different aspect. Certainly felt a lot more at ease at Bodhinyana, obviously having spent there for 7 years. So it just felt like going back to my own home, old town, old hangout. And but with anything, yeah, there are changes. Something stays the same, something's very different. But it's a reflection on a very, very large sangha. Lots of things happening with any kind of a big monastery, any projects, many comings and goings. And reflect on that as you know. But we are a different phase of the monastery, where things are still very, very quiet, very small. And it's a nice feeling just to be here with a few people instead of being a larger community. Doing lots of things, which you know, obviously, things have their purposes, have their place. Yeah. And just saying, yeah, it does takes a lot of work just to keep things going. Yeah, like I said, a lot of appreciation for Ajahn Brahm's hard work of running 3 places, half a dozen Buddhist centers in Australia. Few other places in different places in the world, Hong Kong, Singapore, Indonesia. Yeah, it does takes a lot of focus, a lot of energy. So so it's not always about letting go. It's about sometimes kind of rousing energy that you do what's needed to be done, not just in the practice but in day-to-day life as well. And same with looking at going to Amawati. Seeing how Ajahn Amro, the abbot of the monastery there, also running a few different centers in the sense that Amawati has a retreat center on site as well as a nunnery. So it's a dual community. And that has its challenges during the retreat or during the meeting. It's always, where are the nuns going to sit? How's that going to work? And do they have equal access to the Ajahn and different things? And that always came up at different times. And but overall, very well organized, felt very well looked after at and it's interesting because I'm just kind of feeling being different places. Bodhinyana, I was fairly senior because it's pretty much a very young community, so sitting a couple places away from Ajahn Brahm, depends on who's around, there's different people coming and going, yeah. But then at the at the big meeting, the big abbot's meeting, there are many, many senior monks are like 40 plus reigns. So I was like number 50 plus something. Yeah? So it's nice to see the fade back in the background. And just listen, mostly listen to the senior monks, senior nuns, listen to what they had to say about, you know, how to train, the training of young monks, the running of monasteries, dealing with different issues that come up as a sangha. Yeah. And so that was kind of also nice, actually. But with anything, that luckily only happened every 3 years, because there was a lot of talking, lots of informal teas, lots of catching up. And you did feel, yeah, I felt, you know, well, it was good, but you did feel drained after the few days. So I slept a lot in between meetings. At the meetings, have the tea, go back, lie down, it's like, oh God, another meeting, go run around. So that was nice. So it brought to mind the, and also, you know, getting ready for the rains retreat coming up for us in a few weeks' time. Brought to mind like the four thing, upanaka dhammas, which mean the incontrovertible teachings, which means, what does that mean? I don't know what it means. Means that these four things, these four dhammas, are never wrong when you practice them. These four dhammas are something that's always right to different degrees. I think this is a bit of a rip-off of Ajahn Pasano. I think he gave the same talk. I vaguely remember. I was going to check, but hopefully I get it right. The four upanaka dhammas are, first is moderation eating, cultivation of wakefulness. Third is iffy, but I'm going to take a stab. I think it's noble silence or talking little. And the fifth, I'm pretty sure that fourth, the tradition, this one is restraint of the senses. And these are the four dhammas that are never wrong. Right? So in moderation of food, you know, it's like eating what's right. It's not fasting, completely not eating, but also not indulging, eating whatever eating as much as you want, whenever you feel like it. Yeah. So it takes, you know, this kind of clarity, steadiness. Takes an effort just to monitor, you know, how much you should eat, you know, and where's your how much nutrient, how much your body needs on a day-to-day basis, whether there's lots of physical work or which is, you know, just, you know, doing more meditation. So it's just constantly, you know, monitoring the intake of the food, what's just, you know, what you need for the body, instead of kind of veering towards, you know, complete indulgence, and then flip me back out of guilt or remorse. Try the other sense, I'm not eating it at all. Yeah. So there's always different ways of practice around the food, and you know, the forest choice tradition, there's always lots of ways. And I was encouraging people to want us to count the how many mouthfuls before you get full. The other one is how many times you chew before you swallow. You know, just little things that, you know, to be staying in the present moment, don't get lost on the old habits when we eat. Of either talking or drifting off to thinking and wondering and projecting. And the other one is, yeah, knowing what food agrees with you. You know, what foods, you know, makes you tired, what foods, you know, you're slightly allergic to, what foods, you know, brings up lust, if that's the case at all. And yeah, just being aware of different things coming up. And it takes, you know, interest, it takes being there, it takes not getting away of things. Yeah, so, you know, day-to-day mindfulness, always bringing them back to the, you know, to your everyday practice, you know, simple teachings, but it has a strong result, strong effect on your state of mind, because you in the early years of Sma, I can see it. Obviously, in Thailand, it's very hot, and the food, and the shall we say the control over the food is much more restricted. They literally lock up the pantry after the meal; you can't come in there. So you have one shot, one meal a day. So it's always the chance of the impulse of, you know, I can get as much as I want, get as much as I want, because, you know, I don't get anything else the rest of the day. And then, so you get this impulse of, yeah, you eat a lot. And if you're very, very tired right afterward, obviously, very sleepy, so you slept all the afternoon. And then, you know, wouldn't have energy to practice. And then guilt takes over, then you want to fast. You fast, don't eat. Then, but when you fast, you feel very tired. Then you might say, okay, yeah, you know, just, you know, to kind of exercise some control, some willpower over the practice. be able to fast and just be with the unpleasantness of the body. But that's not always the purpose of fasting. Is exert more willpower. I mean, usually the purpose of fasting is when you take less food or no food, there is a measure of peace. The mind, some people, and at times, you do feel more peaceful when you're not taking food, when the practice is going well. But only then, not as a way to kind of force the body into not eating because you feel guilty because you've been eating too much. Yeah, so fasting has its use, but only when you're ready and then when the time is right. Yeah, not just for the sake of exercising, but just because it's difficult that you want to do it. Sometimes people fast just for different reasons, but certainly 1 or 2 days, 3 days should not be a problem if you're kind of experimenting with fasting and not taking food. But be careful with anything. It's with fasting is when you break the fast because you've been so hungry for 3 days, you go to the other extreme, you pig out again a few days afterward when you break the fast. So this you see this the young monks back and forth flipping back and forth, and the aim of practice is now to tell people it's the steadiness, the day to day. Ajahn Chah always famous said, it's easy to obviously, eat as much as you want and just go for it. It's also easy not to eat anything. Just don't show up in the meal. You're not tempted to do anything. But the thing is just to show up the meal and eat just enough. Yeah, eating just enough is a very refined practice. It's something that takes work over time. It's something that we should aim for, the steadiness of practice, showing up and doing, same and not get carried away, one end or the other extreme. Yeah, don't go to the extreme, but just stay in the middle somewhere. How many mouthful? 30, 50, 60? How much do you need? Just know that much. So that's one, is the moderation eating. The second is the cultivation of wakefulness, the jaggeriya. And that's also helpful. It's not about sleeping, sleeping as little as you can get away with. That can have its uses, but also sleeping in the right amount. And something you have to know for yourself. You don't have to take the current fashionable scientific thing of 8 hours or whatever. If you meditate a lot and you have a certain body type, you don't need that much. And sometimes 5 or 6 is plenty, depends on your meditating. But also, it's just to know, to know for yourself. And also not to be afraid just to push, get up a little bit earlier, stay up later and see how that feels like. And you know for yourself, you're not working 8 hours, not being stressed out. Generally the body doesn't need so much. It's the stress, the worries, the anxiety that tires the mind out, tires the body. You feel you need to rest more. But if you're relaxed, happy, peaceful, and have a deep sleep when you do lie down, you don't need that all much. And just as we go towards the range, experiment with that as well. To see how much sleep can you deal with. But also the wakefulness is something that happens throughout the day. Where are you? Are you awake, aware? Sometimes you have to, and also monks can be idealistic. He says, okay, first monk, well, I don't take a nap. Just get my whatever sleep in and I'm not taking a nap. And then, fine. The practice, don't lie down in the afternoon, which is a way just to push the limit of your endurance a little bit. But use your common sense. If you're not lying down for 15, 20 minutes, but yet you're nodding all afternoon between 2 and 5 session or something, then there's no point. You just wasted 3 or 4 hours nodding back and forth instead of just lying down for about 20 minutes and then feeling awake and aware. And same thing in the morning. You're sleeping too little at night, then on the morning sessions and you're nodding and not getting up, and then that's kind of a waste of time as well. Yeah. So play with the sleeping, but also see, what results it has, what results it bring. Does it bring more clarity, more peacefulness, or is it, just making you tired? Or sleeping too much also makes you very sleepy, which is ironic, but that's what it does. When you sleep in, you just feel more sleepy. Maybe sometimes in the afternoon, 20, 30 minutes is good enough, but you find if I sleep like 1 hour or 2 hours, I actually wake up more tired than I am if I just sleep just for a little. So with anything, also just this ability just to look inward, to see, what effects do your actions have on your body and mind. What's it bringing? Is it increasing sense of peace, steadiness? or just kind of the movement between all or nothing, the vacillation between the between two extremes of sleeping too much or not sleeping enough, back and forth. And it's the same, but the steadiness, you know, always move towards the steadiness, suddenly living the day to day, and you know, a bit of change. But yeah, and the day to day practice is just that much, just the little things that, you know, kind of wandering. And it's not exactly earth-shattering. That's going to blow your mind away when eating and sleeping and then not talking. And at times, it seems rather boring. People always want to do the extreme. And some people do, people did mention that, Vapananacha, the fasting and sleep deprivation is the monk's drug of choice. Because you're not, you can't take drugs, you can't listen to music, you can't stimulate yourself. So what you do is, yeah, don't eat and see what happens. And then body goes, you know, different changes, you get different feelings. Or you don't sleep, then you see what happens. Just to get a bit of adrenaline, a bit of a sense pleasure of being different. But also not to veer towards that, you know, doing it just for the, because you're bored and you want to do something. And yeah, so just use it as, you know, is it bringing more stillness, bringing more peace, more clarity? And it is, the practice is, you know, peace. You know, we want a peace and stillness, clarity. But what do you think that, what does that mean? What does peace mean? We think, oh, peace is a good idea. You know, I'm very distracted. I like peace. But really, you come to a monastery and you can't read, or not read, can't read too much, can't watch movies, can't listen to music, can't take your drugs or your booze that you used to. You feel very bored. Like, I'm really bored, Ajahn. What should I do? You actually go somewhere else, go to the Tibetan, do some singing and dancing or something. This doesn't more exciting than our boring Theravada chanting. But I'm trying to kind of give you a heads up. Peace is boring. If you're bored, that's good. You're getting more peaceful. That's what you're more going for. You just haven't recognized it. You label that your perception is wrong. That's slightly from the worldly sense. Because we like excitement. The world, yours excitement, you know, go for the extreme experiences. Extreme sport, extreme everything. Extreme makeover, extreme decorating. Everything is extreme. But any other shows have extreme in them. Otherwise, people don't watch it. Because it's just too normal, too boring. Yeah. And then we're conditioned by those things. So we want to go to meditation. We want the extreme experience. The mind-blowing jhana, this that every, you know, some teachers talk about. The world shaking, the world shattering sense, you know, kind of insight that come and hits you. It's not like that. It's like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Yeah, it's the most subtle, you know, things that begins to shift and fall into place as you meditate. And a lot of it is just kind of through the day-to-day experience. It's not, you know, we want, you know, the whiz-bang of the psychic powers of, you know, the jhanas or the psychic powers of mind reading and future foreboding, listening to deva sounds. But really, now Thich Nhat Hanh hit it on the nail. He said, that's not, that's interesting, but that's not really a miracle. The miracle, true miracle of Buddhism is the miracle of the Dhamma, that you walk on earth, not because you walk on air and you fly through the air and travel through time. The miracle of Buddhism is that you walk on earth, but you're mindful in each and every moment. That's the miracle that you should be aware of. That's the miracle that's much more deep. That's the miracle that you can use. That you walk on earth and you're there. You actually feel every step. And you're aware of what's around you. You're aware of the wonderful nature that we're, you know, kind of surrounded by. The sounds of the birds. You're aware of your emotional states that arise and pass away. That's what the Buddha said. That's one of his magical power. He knows the power of the Tathagata, the 10 wonderful powers of the Tathagata. The other 9, I can't remember. But the 10th one I do remember. It's the one he says, that the Tathagata knows the states, feelings arise, and feelings that pass away. Well, that's not very exciting. that's not psychic power, it's boring. But that is true. When you start to practice, you understand. Yeah, just understanding, you know, your own body and mind, the rising, staying of different things, and passing away. Just that much. Understand that, yeah, peace is the inclination of, you know, nothing happening. Yeah. And that includes, you know, the whiz bang thing of that you might be craving for. But as you meditate, the mind does kind of calm down. And yeah, not to get you excited, but you get your whiz bang. You'll get your whiz bang more than you imagine. When the mind settles down, the things that you can see, the perception starts to take wings. You can see and perceive things in different ways that you can't imagine that happen. And that also happens. But then, you know, by then, hopefully you have the steadiness, the clarity to say, yeah, okay, whatever. It's just perception arising, passing away. Let's see. Big Deva coming to say hi to you. When you see big, the devil coming inside to poke at you a little bit. Whatever it is that you see, it is what it is. Things arising, staying, and passing away. Nothing more, nothing less. And as you, you know, and things settles down, you begin to appreciate just, yeah, just being in the present moment and allowing things to fade away. And appreciate, you know, kind of the spaciousness of the experience, spaciousness of your day, not filling up with lots of things to do. Not kind of feeling, you know, with it, like you have to be anywhere, do anything, get somewhere from the practice. But just the ability just to, just, you know, happiness, the gratitude, sense of well-being, just being in your own skin, being happy with where you're at. With the level amount of defilements that's arising in your mind, and the level of spiritual quality that's also arising in your mind from time to time. Happy to be where you are. You don't need to be any more holier than you are. You don't need to be anywhere else but then you are. Guess what? Guess what? Because you can't. At this present moment, this is what you are kind of equipped with. Certain strength and weakness, certain strength and certain weaknesses, certain defilements, certain craving that comes up. And that's what the training comes in. It's the steering away from the defilements, steering away from unwholesome activities, and steering away, and the kind of focusing on wholesome activities, wholesome states of mind, and doing things that will encourage that, instead of allowing the mind just to drip up to old habits of kind of negativity, unwholesomeness. So that is, but the first two is what? Moderation, eating, sleeping, cultivation, wakefulness. I think the third one is the same as the, roughly the same one is the talking, moderation, or talking little. And in the community, yeah, as you know, I say over and over again, our speech has effect on others. You know? And as we go towards the rains and try to give the gift of silence to the people around us, yeah, and hopefully people understand that. If then you see people, you don't talk to them, doesn't mean you're being unfriendly. You're just allowing them to have space. Yeah, so encourage people not to loiter around the kitchen too much. To have your own kettle, you don't have your own, you know, flask, have tea in your hut, and spend more time kind of in seclusion. And just look inward, just see what's inside this body and mind of ours that we've been, you know, living with. Yeah. Who do you take yourself to be? What you take yourself to be? What things you say to yourself? What narrative you say to yourself when no one's around? When you're quiet, what things you say? What memories you think about? What thoughts come to your mind? A lot of times it's a good way to allow the different emotional stuff that we kind of bury come up as well. And to work with those, wherever they happen to be. So that's the encouragement for, like, you know, talking a little. To not affect each other, not disturb each other by the different things. No need to tell people if your practice is going really, really well. No need to tell people if your practice is going terrible. Or you're depressed. It is what it is. So the encouragement is, yes, just to talk a little, spend more time in seclusion. And the fourth one is restraint of the senses. And it goes along with the other three kind of dhammas. It's always kind of being aware, you know, where's your mind? Yeah. You know, are we stimulating our taste? Are we looking for entertainment? When you're reading a dhamma book, you're reading for peace or reading to entertain yourself with new concepts and ideas? When you are eating the food, is it just for the body, or is it just to get a bit of a hit? Which, fair enough, you know, it is a bit of a hit, because that's how we get to, in terms of in the monastery. But not to, you know, not to get carried away with, but not to be ultra austere about it. That not, you know, that only take the food that's super bland, but throw a whole bunch of sauces on it that you can't taste anything. And we can try that for a couple of weeks and see how that feels like. But the general thing is, yeah, just to understand, yeah, taste is like this. Your taste of your favorite food just tastes like that. Last a few seconds in your mouth and you swallow, and that's the end of that. Yeah. So it's not as to suppress, not as to negate sense pleasure, but understand sense pleasure is just that much. It's not very long lasting. And it doesn't provide eternal happiness, sense of well-being. Just the opposite. It just gives you an emptiness when it's not there and you have to fill it with something else. So understand sense pleasure is just that much. It's just, you know, this kind of reaching out. It's a chase that you never quite get, that you never win. Because once you feel it, once you finish that, you got something else to go to. It's always this emptiness that we're trying to feel. It's always a pit in your stomach that you're trying to feel with sense pleasure. And knowing that, we restrain the senses. And it's not easy in the beginning because, you know, it doesn't sound fun. You know, we're used to doing things, enjoying things. And all of a sudden we have to move in the opposite direction. But we're training the mind is that once you kind of pull back, you can serve the energy that would go out in talking, would go out in sleeping too much, and different things, and thinking. Once you can serve the energy, it starts to build up. The momentum of peace starts to build up. And the meditation becomes deeper by itself. But unless we learn to restrain the senses, you know, it's just never quite happened. Yeah. If it's the mind just goes out to too many different things. But what do you think? It's a gradual process. It's a process of, you know, starting with and building on kind of the positive qualities, building on a lot of, you know, thoughts of gratitude, thoughts of contentment, thoughts of metta towards yourself and others. Yeah. Just a sense of well-being. Yeah. Happy just to be here. Happy just to be where you are in your own skin. You know, each and every one of you have what it takes to do the practice, to meditate, to keep sila, to realize ultimate enlightenment. You have what it takes. Yeah, just, you know, reflect on that. Reflect on your own goodness, your own strength. And be aware, oh yeah, okay, we all have our defilements. But still, we all still have what it takes to overcome that. The wisdom, the intelligence, the patient endurance, just to be with these things. Yeah. And don't doubt that. Sometimes, you know, we're prone to negativity, or whatever. But just, you know, as long as you build up the sense of peace, well-being, happy where you are, of course, dealing with your defilements, the obstacles, they come from time to time. And the five hindrances I talked about is normal. You know, sloth and torpor, greed, irritation, doubt, restlessness, it's normal. So don't make a sense of self out of it. These are the five hindrances. These are the obstacles sometimes they appear. How? Your job is, yeah, to learn from them, to understand them, and then to transcend them. Once you understand them, they transcend automatically. So that's the thing, just being with them to understand them. Then they move away. Yeah. And these things are natural process of kind of a gradual wearing away of things. And yes, life in the monastery is bloody boring. But that's good. It's meant to be boring. So we do things every day. We don't have the meal. One day at 10 o'clock, another day at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 9:30. Occasionally we move the meetings around. But that's not because we're bored, because the things change. But just to, when you're bored, just tell yourself, this is great, I'm really, really bored today. It's perfect. Oh, I'm getting peaceful. I'm getting more into things. I'm in the monastery. What do you expect? And then once there's a flip the switch, you're like, boredom is peace, boredom is stillness, boredom is emptiness. Wow, it's great, I'm bored today. So happy to be bored, sitting here doing nothing. Okay. So those are the four apanaka dhammas, moderation eating, cultivation of wakefulness, I think, restraint of talking little, and restrain the senses, the five senses of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. Yeah? Or understanding their allure, just that much, no more, no less. So I offer that for your reflection for tonight.
So Sangha.